Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are so excited today to have a special edition where we're going to talk about America 250. Joining me in studio on the left, Shireen Gourvani.
Hello, listeners. I hope that you enjoy us trying to say sesquicentennial.
And on the political right.
It's some other funky term. You know?
Yeah. Political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you.
Well,
happy almost Independence Day.
Yeah, lots of things to chat about. Can we just take just a second and just talk about how you all celebrate this? I mean, the 250th is something different, so you can add on, but I'm a Murrayite, as we might say. I live in Murray. Murray has its own parade, its own park system. It's a full-day event to celebrate the 4th of July in Murray, and that's what we do every year.
Yeah, that's cool. I've been in that 4th of July parade a few times.
Of course you have. And I've probably yelled out at you.
It really is one of the most charming.
It's charming, for sure.
I think.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is the Magna 4th of July parade, which is a wild time. It feels very like North Dakota to me, in the sense that, and I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but people are just like open containering on the street. So there are people cracking beers, having like a good time.
Yeah.
It feels a little more rugged, a little more Western than the rest of
the valley.
I haven't
seen a lot of that in Provo.
Exactly. I was going to say probably not the vibe in Provo.
But Provo has the greatest
Freedom Festival
concentration of like big time activity.
I can remember as a college student camping out on the sidewalk overnight waiting for the parade the next day. I've been in the parade a couple times and all those festivities. I've been to Stadium of Fire. So that's some of it. But a big part for me, this is going to be wonkish, but it's, rereading the Declaration of Independence and reading some history.
Yeah. The policy wonk in you and the attorney in you. That's big stuff. What are the values that define America for you? Everyone's going to say freedom, but what do you say?
Well, a big part of it is freedom, self-governance, personal responsibility.
Love it.
And that it's an experiment, that we are adapting and adjusting and improving over time. And sometimes it's like two steps forward, one step back. But America is
imperfect.
Imperfect, but working generally in a direction of getting better and better over time.
Yeah, Shireen, we always say in order to form a more perfect union, like we're always in the act of becoming.
Well, what about you, Natalie? What do you think about
core? I have a bracelet that I wear sometimes. I don't have one on today, but I often wear a little beaded bracelet with one word on it. And I have one of those that says freedom on it. And I wore it on Election Day this year, So I think freedom is the big one for me. Liberty, I kind of lump those together.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Shireen?
Not those words. Interesting.
Let's hear it.
I think about being a nation of immigrants. I think about complex history of, I feel like I'm going to be a real drag, but a stolen land. I think about as a person from the Upper Great Plains, I think a lot about vast and open spaces. And I know that our country doesn't look like that as a whole, but I feel most whole when I'm on a prairie and can kind of see genuinely the amber waves of grain. I think about industry. I think about progress. I think about being able to, or striving to, or wanting to live in a country where people can, workers can be protected. People can live safely and freely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty concerned that we're actually backsliding quite a bit when it comes to the core notion of freedom.
Yeah. Okay. Well, part of our country is to be able to be critical, critical.
Yeah.
So you got a little bit of that in your tone there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about personalities.
Yeah.
So if we go back in time and think about the American people, who are the leaders? We'll start with you, Shireen, that like have inspired you, and I'm talking the big ones.
Okay.
Like going way back, to our founding.
Wow. That's not a place that I derive inspiration from.
Why? I derive a lot of inspiration from
it. I know you do. I know you do.
So why?
Because it feels to me like, if I think about our founding fathers, I think about an immense sense of entitlement. I think about an immense sense of courage. I think about privilege, but when I think about being truly inspired by this country, I think about the fugitive slave. I think about the people whose, land we took and who maintained their culture. I think about I was thinking about who I wanted to talk about if I had to say somebody who really inspires me as an American. And I would say somebody like Dolores Huerta, who in the news recently, I think is now in her late 90s, organized for protections for farm workers. Like, those are the kinds of places and stories that I really derive inspiration about what this country could be or the promise of this country. And I understand that, you know, large group of men came together and tried to hash out these ideals. And I'm grateful that they did. But it's not a group of people that I find deep inspiration in as individual characters.
John, give us the alternative.
And I'm probably the opposite. You know, I look at George Washington and go, here is someone who could have been king and didn't just lay down power once, but twice. Led us in the Revolutionary War. And then turned power back over to Congress and stepped down. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then was elected president, served two terms. There was no term limits in there, mm-hmm. could have kept serving mm-hmm. and stepped down because he did not want to be king. Okay.
Yeah.
Was he a perfect man? No. All of our founders are flawed individuals. And yet you look at this higher purpose of what they did. I look at Thomas Jefferson, who penned the words that all men are created equal. Okay. And in that time, when they said that and when they voted on that,
they didn't do it.
Well, they didn't do it. They knew that they weren't doing it. They knew the hypocrisy of what they were doing. But to me, they were trying to lay out a broader vision of where America needed to go. And they knew that that's where America needed to go, even though it took, unfortunately, decades to get there in a civil war.
Yeah.
And then decades after that. And we're still on that trajectory.
Yeah.
But I look at John Adams, who was kind of forgotten in this whole process oftentimes until David McCullough wrote a book about him. And yet he was the voice, like Jefferson was the pen, to the cause of independence. You know, he was such that he was the second president, the first vice president, and yet was kind of lost to history to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But you look at all of them. And then John, we've got such an incredible record of John with Abigail. And what was Abigail telling John at the time? Don't forget the ladies. In this whole process, don't forget the ladies, because she viewed suffrage for women as a critical thing.
Yeah.
Now, it took us,
a while.
Too long to get there.
Yep.
Until 1920. But, I mean, we had women's suffrage in Utah, and it was taken away as we became a state before we got it back. So.
Now, I'm no expert on these things, but there is this notion of those, you know, uber important leaders, and then there's the everyman.
Yeah.
You know, there's the person, the Rosa Parks. Just, I'm thinking of the guy in Tiananmen Square who stood in front of the tank, right? So, I mean, our country has a mix of all of that.
Or Frederick Douglass.
Tell us more about Frederick Douglass.
Well, just someone who was a slave that you know, essentially, to my mind, became somewhat a partner with Abraham Lincoln in the cause of freedom and freeing the slaves, and, you know, self-taught, and just from my reading of history, a brilliant man.
Yeah. Okay. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, how about you?
Oh, I mean, I'm in the same camp with John.
With John.
Thank you, John, for being so articulate about it. No, but I mean, if I go think of past presidents, I mean, Lincoln is a favorite. I love how Lincoln wrote. I love how he reflected. I love that he had a lot of challenges in his personal life and triumphed through them. And he's just extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, if I have to pick a president, there are many things that Nixon did that I'm grateful for, which is strange
Isn't
to
that
say.
Interesting?
Wow.
Probably it's Kennedy, just as a person who served in the Peace Corps, that sort of vision for what it means to be, you know, in service to this country through different means than just war.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I want to talk about patriotism for a second. Just that term kind of gets me happy and excited.
What does that term mean to you?
Well, I think of all the things that I have memorized and thought through, whether it's our Pledge of Allegiance, you know, whether it's America the Beautiful, the song. I love the book Patriotic Grace, written by Peggy Noonan, where she's asking us to rise ourselves to a higher level of patriotism. This is way long ago now. Yeah. I mean, we need more patriotic grace even more now. But those are kind of the patriotic. I mean, you mentioned From Sea to Shining Sea, I think you did.
Amber Waves of Grain.
You did Amber Waves of Grain. So, of course, I think of Purple Mountains Majesty. Yeah. Why do I? Because at the right sunset moment, our Wasatch Peaks are all purple. Yeah. And every time I see the purple, I'm like, yep, that's Purple Mountains Majesty. Uh-huh. How about you guys, patriotism in an emotional way?
I mean, for me, I genuinely feel, as much as I'm critical of this country, I feel like that alone, like having that right, is something I'm incredibly proud of. I didn't serve this country in the Peace Corps by accident. I did it because I believe that we should serve the country that gives us as much as we have. I could have been born in Iran and my future would have been much different than it is here.
Especially today.
Yeah. And I see that and I recognize that. And I fundamentally believe that that is why I want it to be a better country.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about patriotism. Two things come to mind for me. One, I think of Statue of Liberty, you know, bringing Amen. Pour your huddled masses yearning to be free.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I think about Ronald Reagan, about talking about that shining city on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, patriotism isn't about we're better than you, but it is taking and shining this example of how great a free people can be and how we need to be that example to the world.
It's great. Hey, in our next segment, I've got some polling data I want to ask you about. So stay tuned, everybody. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. We are celebrating America's 250th and doing a special edition on it. And I want to start off this segment by just...
Before you go, do you remember 1976?
I do.
The bicentennial?
Yeah, I do.
I remember a little bit of it.
Barely, but I do.
Yeah, so, and you're much too young.
No. No.
Yeah, like I don't remember where I was or anything like that, but I know it was a thing.
Yeah, I just remember there's a whole bunch of stuff about bicentennial. I seemed to remember going to a fireworks show, maybe a parade, good. But I can't remember a lot of it.
Yeah,
But I do remember it was a thing.
Well, John and Shireen, when you think of images that define America, we've got a poll that says that 72% think of the founding documents.
Yeah,
we're pretty proud of those, aren't we?
Yeah.
71% say that when a veteran returns home, it evokes these deep feelings of patriotism for Americans. What are some of the images, symbols that stand out for you about our country?
Oh, well, again, I feel like mine is
I talked about
maybe,
Statue of Liberty already. That's one of them.
Yeah.
This is pedestrian, but, you know, I'll share this example. McDonald's.
Yeah.
Now, it's broader than McDonald's, but you think about how something so cultural in America has spread worldwide.
Yeah.
And whether that's McDonald's or, you know, Apple computers or, you know, on and on and on.
Yeah.
You think about the entrepreneurial spirit that has blessed the world as a result.
Yeah.
And the, you know, free economy or freer economy as a result.
This is an unfortunate thought, but think of 9/11 and the image of the World Trade Towers and they get hit. Now, that's an image of prosperity, Wall Street, financial district, you know, that part of our country. But, you know, some of those planes were thought to be going for the Capitol and the White House. We know we got one in the Pentagon, but I only bring that up to say that Capitol's a big symbol for me, as is the White House, as is the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
But you think about the Twin Towers and you think about the day after 9/12 and how we felt as not just American people, but worldwide.
February 8th when they brought in the flag in opening ceremony here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of something different.
Why we do this show.
Images of... I think about like the integration of the schools. I think about those images from the 60s of...
Shireen, you are a liberal through and through.
I am.
It's in your blood.
I'll tell you, the one that's like burned into my memory is much more recent, but it's this young woman. I actually looked up her name because I was thinking in preparation for this. Her name was Aisha Evans. She was 28 years old. In 2016, in Baton Rouge, there's an iconic photo of just a wall of policemen. She's out protesting and... She is just standing like a statue in the middle of the street. And I think about those images and like how lucky we are to be able to do that still.
Yeah. Well, I respect that about you. John, over half of Americans, that's like 59%, say it's very important to their personal identity that they're an American. Is it to you?
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Yeah,
very
like when so. You come in from
especially
traveling.
Especially when America is showing it's putting its best foot forward.
Yeah, when you enter this country and you're going up to the, you know, immigration lines and you have to show your passport and it's saying European Union here and all others here. And like you're happy to have that navy blue passport.
Yeah, or I'll describe it as when you travel outside, whether you're traveling in the U.S. and you run into folks that are foreigners that are visiting here, or you're traveling in Europe or wherever else you might be. I was in Italy last year and talking with folks about the greatness of America.
Yeah. I mean, I still feel lucky to be an American.
Just being clear.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, when you think about those sort of big identifiers, what it means to be American, I worry about how that's changing. And I think about small things. Just probably 15, 12 years ago, I visited a friend in Jamaica. I feel like I've talked about this before. She got a Fulbright. And it was so interesting to see all of the construction projects around Jamaica that were sponsored with like a partnership with China. And we're seeing more and more of that, right, around the world, that other countries are stepping up in places where we used to be. And the decimation of USAID only adds to that. The way that people felt about America when I served in the Peace Corps in 2002, right, was just so different than the kind of sentiment that people have now.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, and there's a nuance in there that I'll just, the way I heard you say that was, struck me as there's kind of two things, how the U.S. government responds versus how the American people respond. And I focus much more on the American people and how we, you know, we're a very, very charitable set of folks that reach out not just across the country, but across the world to help. And to me, that's even more important than the U.S. government and what it does.
I mean, that's because we're from everywhere, right? A nation of immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the American dream.
And this is what you talk about. We're a country based on a creed, not based on birthright, not based on, you know, family or
creedal documents.
Yeah. It's a set of documents. It's
a this promise.
This is what we believe as Americans. Yeah. This is what we rally around.
Yeah.
This idea.
Yeah.
American dream, John, how do you define it? And then I'll ask you the
American
same question.
American dream to me just means you have the opportunity to make yourself into what you will, you know, to choose a path you want to live and provided that you're not harming someone else, then you're free to make yourself into whatever.
A big freedom. How do you define it?
Yeah, I think about it as the opportunity to live a life that is meaningful, that is, you know, rooted in some sense of community, that a community, a government cares about you, that you care about it. I don't quite think we're there, but sometimes we are. And that really inspires me.
Well, and you're articulating what I think some feel strongly. I'm coming from the perspective of, I describe myself as the eternal optimist.
Yeah.
That we're getting better, 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 better. You know, there's steps back, but you know, we can make a more perfect union, if you will, in this case. And some people look at the founding and look at the flawed nature of the founders and the environment that they came from with the lenses that we have today. And you know, some will say they feel embarrassed by them or other things like that and don't understand why they engaged in the practices they engaged in, whether it's slavery or other things.
Yeah.
And to me, it just strikes me different. I look and go, the incredibleness of what they did to bring us to where we're at today, what we've built upon, rather than condemning them for, you know, some of the weaknesses and practices that I would not engage in today.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What about for you? What's the American
dream?
Well,
if you look at polling data, most people associate the American dream with financial security and protection of rights.
Yeah.
You know, and so financial well-being of your family, do you own a home, those sorts of things. Shereen, I'm an economist. I define it as like, do you earn more than your parents?
I know. But like,
so, and of course, the American dream is in decline.
Yeah.
I mean, it's suffering. I can show you the data on that if you want. But it's also,
meaning the opportunities are declining. The belief in it is declining. When you say it's in decline, what does that mean?
Yeah. The chances of you earning more than your parents are declining.
And I think this is something else that struck me when Sean, you wanted to talk about this topic was just some 2025 data from the Federal Reserve. So I feel like you'll appreciate this, Natalie, that the top 1% of households hold 31.7% of all U.S. wealth. And that is at the highest it has ever been.
1% owns 32%.
Yeah.
1% owns a third.
And that's to me, that says something is wrong. You know, we have... We want
what
people.
If everybody's rising?
But they're not, is what you just told me.
No. Almost everybody is rising because you look and say the lifestyle of even the poorest Americans today is better than the lifestyle of the poorest Americans of 50 years ago.
Right. But we haven't changed what defines poverty in this country in a really long time. And there's also just about a really stubborn, somewhere about 11%.
Oh, no, the line for poverty keeps going up because you're poor today and yet folks have TVs and they have microwaves and they have cars and they have things that they couldn't imagine.
We accept an enormous amount of lack of poverty in this country that we simply do not have to.
One way I would say it that I think Shireen would agree with is in this country, poverty has been a choice.
A choice.
With that wealth, you could lift them all out of poverty.
Yes.
In a heartbeat.
Yep.
You could redistribute. It's just it would... cripple innovation and growth.
Maybe. We don't know. We haven't tried. But we continue to lead in things that are important. Research, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Innovation, certainly. In some ways, arts and entertainment.
Yeah.
I think we're still leading culture in many ways. That's exciting.
So I'm right of center conservative. Free enterprise, limited government, all of those kinds of things. I am troubled by the disparities that we see in income, in education, in housing. Those sorts of things. I mean, and I think it's, and when I say that, I'm meaning the difference among racial and ethnic minorities, among urban and rural.
Yeah.
You can find a lot of them. It's a fact that exists. What there's a lot of disagreement on is what do you do about it?
Right.
That's where I like to weigh in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, and that's where some will say we need more government programs to help with this and that and the other to redistribute. And to me, I would come in and say the government has engaged too often in too many places, which has crippled the ability for the market to respond.
I was at a policy summit this week, the Association of Utah Policy Centers up at Utah State, and all of these policy centers, the university had to say, what's your biggest challenge?
Yeah.
And for many of them, their biggest challenge was funding and government, this, that, and the other. And I found myself standing up in front of them and saying, do you know that the private sector is 85 to 90% of everything in this economy? And all you do is complain about government funding.
Yeah.
There's so much more out there.
Go get it.
Yeah, quit trying to, you know, be government. So to your point, John.
Yeah.
Hey, we only got a few more minutes. How should we back out of this?
I guess what I'm thinking is what would be your hope for America as we move forward? What would you maybe as individuals, what would be your sort of wish for who we become?
Yeah. I mean, my number one, I'm signed into the dignity movement, right? I'm looking for people to treat everybody with dignity, that it's not earned, that it's a given, you know, by your maker. And we've got to inject more dignity into all of our interactions.
Yeah.
And then if we do that, everything else will get better.
Yeah. I think about some core ideas to be educated, to be capable, to be caring. I think if I could have a wish for America, it would maybe be those kind of central things.
Educated, caring, and
capable.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say the risk of concentrated power. This is one of those things the founders understood.
Mm-hmm.
Power checking power, ambition checking ambition. And yet I see a world today, and I don't care if it's on the left or on the right, they want power to do their agenda, and they don't want constraints of government or other things to get in the way, and they just want to have power to do what they think is right. And to me, we need to be so cautious of that, because that is where, you know, power corrupts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love the notion of unlocking the full human potential in all of our citizens, and I'll point to women in this regard.
Yeah.
Women have so much to offer. They do a lot right now, but we can do even better to find opportunities for women to do more in this country.
Yeah, look and at you. I love this, Natalie.
Well, I'm just sort of like, how about more women senators, more women governors?
Yeah.
Let's get the first woman elected president of the United States.
Interested.
It would be amazing in our country to do that.
Yeah, and I also think, I know we talk about this sometimes too, with maybe a little bit too much saccharine nature, but I do think sitting down and having conversations with you each week shapes how I feel about this country, and actually to the positive. When I talk with people who hold different beliefs than I do and we continue to engage week after week, I do feel hope for the future.
Sure.
So I would invite people to find someone with whom you may disagree and forge a friendship. I think it makes us richer.
You help me do better with my children because they think a lot like you, and so I'm able to empathize with them.
I remind folks, this is a grand experiment, and it's up to each of us to see that it's successful.
Yeah, I love it.
That's right.
Hey, well, thanks for sharing the time. Hey, everyone, have a wonderful holiday, 250th anniversary of this great country.
It's Independence Day, not 4th of July.
There you go.
Independence Day.
Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shereen Gourbani. Anthony Scoma produced the program. Thanks, everybody, for listening.